I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, I am privileged to have Leslie Leland Fields with me. She's an award-winning author, prolific author. I've had the joy of interviewing her numerous times, and I'm delighted to introduce her to my Faith Conversations friends. If you were with me on Midday Connection, then you have heard Leslie before. But if you're new and with me here on Faith Conversations, this may be the first time that we've spoken to Leslie, and I'm excited to introduce you to her for a number of reasons. Not only is she a wonderful writer, but she is a commercial fisherwoman. In fact, she's been that for four decades, working with her husband and six children in a salmon fishing operation on their own island off the coast of Kodiak Island, Alaska. That alone makes her interesting enough to talk to for hours. But today, we're going to also focus on the content of her book, Crossing the Waters, all about following Jesus through the storms, the fish, the doubt, and the seas. And you're going to resonate with some things she talks about. It doesn't matter if you're in Kodiak, Alaska, or out on their own fishing island, or where you're living, wherever that may be, we all encounter the storms and some of the things that she speaks of in her latest book, Crossing the Waters. Leslie, welcome.
Hi, Anita. It's just great to be with you in this new format.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to have you. Always delighted to speak with you. And for people that don't know how you got into the commercial fisherwoman business along with your husband, I mean, how did you land yourself in Alaska on Kodiak Island to begin with?
Oh, you know what? This is not an exciting part of the story because it's really the age-old story of girl meets boy, falls in love. Oh, whoops. Boy happens to be from Kodiak, Alaska, and is a commercial salmon fisherman. Boy and girl fall in love. Girl follows boy to Alaska. That's how I got there.
Well, but girl had to decide if she could live and make it doing that up there in Alaska. And you did.
Yes. Yes, she did. But you know what? It was not hard for a girl because... Okay, just to let your listeners know, we will not be saying girl and boy through the whole time. Yeah. I grew up in New Hampshire and kind of in the woods of New Hampshire, very rural background. And we chopped wood, we hauled water in buckets because our wells went dry. So it was a very earthy, very rustic growing up experience. So even though I was flying, 5,000 miles away, it's really not geography that matters as much as lifestyle. So that kind of rugged, rough, tough, work all the time lifestyle, that's how I grew up.
Yeah. And I knew that, but I know some of my Faith Conversations friends don't know that. So I loved hearing that part of your story again. Well, let's talk about Crossing the Waters. I mean, I love the title for a couple of reasons. One, it obviously talks about and touches on where you live and that business that you've been a part of. But you also interweave a story of your going to Israel and spending some time around the Sea of Galilee. And I think I think that whole thing is interesting, but you dive us into the Gospels. And I'm telling you, you and I were talking before I hit the record button. Now is a time in our world, in our history, in the history of this country, where that's really where we need to be pointed, isn't it?
It really is. We are living in tumultuous times. We all know it. You know, it's been going on for at least a year now through the whole election process and a new administration. And it's been probably a time unlike any other that we've seen in our lifetimes. And I really, every morning we get up and we turn on the news and we're so obsessed with the news cycle. And I think we're making a really big mistake because I see so much anger and confusion and fear and anxiety. And I think we're listening to the wrong news. There's another news cycle that's going on, and it's the good news of the Gospels. And when we look at the scriptures, I'm just amazed. The story of Jesus and how he lived and how he walked and what he did and how he taught is so important. It was so important that God gave us his story, not in one voice. He didn't give us one story. He gave us four gospel stories in four voices because that's how important it is. And we got to turn off the turn off our radios and our screens, and we need to immerse ourselves in the real news, the real good news of the Gospels. And well, I guess we'll talk about what that good news is. But
well, I think that's important to hear. And I think what's interesting is, you know, usually when you're writing a book, you've been writing this maybe a couple of years ago, 18 months ago. So you may or may not have been responding at that point in your writing to the current situation. While it's very relevant now as your book comes out, it might not have been, though, this that prompted you to write the book. Why did you kind of walk down this path toward this topic to begin with?
Yeah, you're right, Anita. You know, none of this was going on when I finished the book. I think what drew me to it, a number of things. One is that, you know, the gospel story of Jesus and the disciples, it can feel so remote to us. You know, these guys, they lived 2,000 years ago in another, you know, another time, another culture, all halfway across the world. And we can end up like turning them into kind of flannel graph figures, you know, in our mind. And if, you know, if you grew up in church, maybe you did see Jesus as an actual flat flannel graph figure. But we've really reduced the Gospels to kind of these little stories with neat little messages and little, you know, package. And we forget how raw and human and real these guys were. And the reason I know how raw, human, and real they were, especially as fishermen, is because I'm a fisherman and my family are fishermen. And there's so many experiences that we've had mending nets on the water, in storms, in boats, and fearing for our lives. And there's so many parallel experiences. I thought, you know what? I really want to enter the Gospels again and open up these lives and these stories so that we can encounter Jesus, the real Jesus, not the flannel graph Jesus, but the real Jesus and the real disciples, the real men who were with him, who were trying to figure out, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And what is he here for?
Well, and I also love the fact, I hadn't thought about this before. I'm so used to hearing that there's so much that the words fear not are throughout scripture and all about, you know, we'd be surprised how many times Jesus and scripture talks about money, but I had not paid attention to how much water is mentioned in scripture until you mentioned it in your book. And then, you know, you started recounting that. And of course, as you're talking about these disciples, many of whom were fishermen, now they all weren't, but there were a lot of them who were.
There were six. I mean, most people think there were four, but it's very likely, highly likely that there were that two more were also fishermen. Because in the end, there are six of them out in the fishing boat, and two of them are from Bethsaida, which is a fishing community. Yeah. So half of the disciples are fishermen. And that was part of the question that sort of drove me into this book, is why did Jesus choose so many fishermen? And maybe if we look at their lives and open them up, maybe we're going to find something new and fresh, and I think it happened.
Well, and you've done the studying, you've done some of the work, and one of the things I appreciate is you do pull us in to do that. You, in fact, have a study guide at the back, which I always love. I'm a big proponent of those in books, and I appreciate that. But do a little teaching here. You're not just a fisherwoman, honestly, and an author. I think you're a downright good teacher here. And I would love to see you unpack some of what you're talking about, some of the things that we really even miss in the disciples' lives. I think we hear certain things, but I think there's a lot underneath the surface that we just sort of walk on by or that doesn't get brought out for us to focus on. And so I would love for you to take us there. And I think one of the things that I love about not just how you write, but what you write is also how you go back and forth between a couple of things, between your experience in Alaska and also the experience at the Sea of Galilee and in the Holy Land. So I'm kind of giving you a blank slate here to kind of launch out. I think maybe because I'm feeling parched. My podcast listeners know I've just moved, looking for a church. I'm feeling parched, and I kind of want Leslie to do a little teaching here.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Why don't we go to one of the storms? And there are two big storm narratives in the Gospels. So this is, you know, one of the most exciting slash terrifying, you know, moments in their lives. So we'll go to the first one, in the calming of the storm. And so what you've got to get this picture. The Sea of Galilee is not very big, but storms can come up in just a few minutes. And I was there and I saw how quickly, within 10 or 15 minutes, suddenly this calm lake is whipped into a froth. And these guys are out there. They don't have a 60 horse outboard like we do. They just have their arms, their hands, and their oars. That's all they've got against the storm. So Jesus is there with them. He's on the seat in the stern, and he's asleep, right? And the storm is getting bigger and bigger. In the book of Mark, it says that the waves were sweeping over the boat, okay? Those are big waves. They're sweeping over the boat, and that means that they're also sweeping into the boat. So just imagine, and I've been out in storms like that, and our boats are about the same size as their boats.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. So
could you ever fall asleep? Could you ever fall asleep?
No, I can't fall asleep in the skiff at all. Forget being in a storm. So there's Jesus, and I love this because that shows us he really was a man. He really was a man. This is not some sort of divinely induced sleep, so the men would be afraid, and that he really is tired. He's really exhausted because he's just poured himself out, you know, to the masses of people. But so here the disciples are, the waves are sweeping over the boat. The boat is filling up with water. They don't have life jackets. They don't have the Coast Guard to come and rescue them. If they're in the water, they will probably die. And you have to understand that if you live on the water, that is your greatest fear, is that you will drown, because every fisherman knows people who drowned. So they are now living out their greatest fear, that they're going to die, they're going to drown. And now combine that with the fact that Jesus is with them, but he is asleep. And combine that with the fact that Jesus, just shortly before, just a few days before, gave this beautiful sermon on the Mount, and he said, you know, do not be anxious about your life. Don't be anxious about your life. Okay. But now they're about to die. So yeah, they're a little anxious right about their life. And there's one more piece to this that, you know, that they can't believe. Not only is Jesus asleep while they're about to die, but he is sleeping. And the book of Mark gives us this one little detail. The other ones don't. He's sleeping on a cushion, is how that word has been translated. It is probably a buoy. It is probably a buoy to the sea anchor. Now, the sea anchor is what you throw over when you're in a storm to give the boat stability. It's like the one trick you've got up your sleeve, you know, is the sea anchor. And Jesus is not only asleep, he is asleep on the sea anchor. So they can't even throw that overboard. So, but listen, Anita, you know, the reason they're terrified is because they don't yet know who Jesus is. And if they had known who he was,
I got to interject because I think what I was just struck with right there, which actually just makes me want to cry, you know, they were afraid because they didn't yet know who Jesus is. I'm sitting here thinking, seriously, God, I'm 56. Do I not yet know who you are? Right? Look at us. People, those of us, we've walked with Christ for a lifetime and find ourselves afraid. All to say, this really does speak. If we look deep enough, these stories, these in the Gospels, they speak to right where we are. I'm feeling it.
They do. And there's more, Anita. So, you know, they did not wake him up. I don't know how long the storm was going on, but it was going on long enough that they were actually terrified. But they did not wake Jesus up. Mm. I think until the moment they were sure that they were going to die. And because they didn't know who he was, they didn't wake him up. They waited until the last minute. If they had known who he really known and understood his love and who he was, they would have awakened him immediately. They wouldn't have waited till the last minute. But here's the thing, you know, and Jesus, they woke him up finally, and Jesus gets up, and I believe that he calmed that storm, not so much to save them from death, but to save them from a worse fate, which is from disbelief, from not knowing who he was. And that's truly when we're most lost. That is real death right there, when we don't believe, when Jesus is with us and we don't believe he's there and we don't believe that he can do anything about our storm. And it's that disbelief that separates us from God. And you know how we feel so alone sometimes in the storm? It's because we're not believing that Jesus is with us and that Jesus is the Lord over the sea and the sky and over every single storm that we find ourselves in.
Well, and I think what's interesting is you talk about some of the hardest issues that we can face in the Christian life. You know, I think we believe that Jesus can be with us through the nominally hard times, right? But I think when we step into those really deep, difficult waters, I would love for you to talk about that and why you decided to go to some of those really difficult places and why it's important to take a look at that. I mean, I agree 100%, but I'd like to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, I have to. I want to tell you about this story, and it's in the book. And I don't want to reveal everything in the book, but this story is so pivotal in my life, and in this book. And the question that we all wrestle with is Jesus real? Is he really real? Is he really there? And how do we know? So my 13-year-old son, we were out at fish camp, and he had a horrible ATV accident, and he crashed into a tree with his face and his leg. And he's lying there on the ground out at our fish camp. His face is smashed and bleeding. I find him there. And the thing is, we are 80 miles away from the town of Kodiak and the hospital. And it was the third day of what we call 00. Fog was pressed to the ground. It was so thick, you almost literally could not see the hand in front of your face. That means that no boats are moving and no planes are flying. No planes had flown for 3 entire days. And here is my son at my feet. It was terrifying. Okay, terrifying. I'm using that same word that the Gospel of Mark uses for the storm. And we knew that the Coast Guard could not come. Nobody could fly in that fog, or they would risk their lives. But somebody did come, a man who had a bush plane company, heard our May Day, and put his plane into the air, into that fog. And that 30-minute flight took an hour and a half because he flew literally around the cliff edges of the island to come to us. And he landed, and we had my son Noah strapped to a door, and he had to take out the seat. We put Noah in the floor of the plane. I climbed in with him. My baby son, who was just 6 months old, I was not leaving Noah. I was going to fly in with Noah.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I took my infant son with me because he was still nursing. And we took off. And we're flying now in fog. Out the windows, there's nothing but white. It's like someone is pressing cotton against all of the windows. Mm-hmm. And 10 minutes into this flight, the plane suddenly goes vertical. I mean, goes vertical in a way that a bush plane should not be able to do. It goes vertical. And I know what's about to happen. We're about to hit a mountain. Because Kodiak is all mountains. It's mountains right down to the sea. And we're surrounded by mountains. And I know we're going to hit that mountain. And in those moments, Anita, in those moments, Jesus was there. Jesus was there. He was with me. And I should have been terrified, but I wasn't. My heart was calm. My body was not shaking. I put one hand on one son, wounded and bleeding, and the other hand on my baby son. And I knew that we were all going home to be with Jesus. And it was okay. I was at total peace, total calm.
And here you are. You did not go home to be with Jesus.
No.
What happened? I don't know if how much more you can tell us.
We missed the mountain. And I think just barely, but we missed the mountain. And I know in my heart of hearts, in my body, in my soul, every part of me, I know how real Jesus is. And I know that Jesus has calmed the biggest storm of all. And that is the storm of death, the storm of sin, and the storm that separates us from God. That's what separates us from God. And Jesus has already calmed that storm. He was the one who leaped into the waters of death and took our place. And when we are in these moments when, and sometimes these moments go on for years, that we're in a really hard place, and sometimes the moments are like that, that we know we're going to die in just a few minutes. But Jesus is with us every moment.
Okay, I need to take a deep breath after that story. Unbelievable. Okay. And here's the thing, that's not the only story that you tell I think, in reading some illustrative stories of certain points where you're just talking about going out in the skiff to go to the nets and to collect the fish, I think honestly that alone is harrowing enough. Especially when you talk about hot, you know, waves that swells that come, you know, I it's really hard for me to fathom that. You know, I realize that we all have swells of certain kinds. It looks different, but yours are so beautifully illustrative of that very present kind of danger. You know, that I think that's what makes this really powerful, reading through Crossing the Waters. I think that's a piece of it. I want to know from you too, what heading to Israel and heading to the Sea of Galilee, what did that mean to you as a Christian and you as a fisherwoman as well? Why was that an important trip for you?
It was because I was, you know, this whole book is searching for Jesus, because I've been a Christian for a really long time. And there are moments and days and months that go by, you know, where we're tired, we're exhausted, and we're looking for Jesus, and sometimes he feels really far away. I mean, this is the reality. This is the reality of our lives. And I wanted to get closer, you know. So I went over to Israel, and this was my fourth time going over, but it'd been a long time since I've been. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to walk the trail around the Sea of Galilee, because I heard there was one. It's called the Gospel Trail. It's not very well known. And I wanted to have this physical experience. You know, this is why so many people go to the Holy Land, is, you know, is this a real place, or is it just like, is it so holy that it's like, you know, it's just like just spiritual, and like there's not really mud there and not really, you know. And so I just wanted to sort of boots on the ground. This is what the ground felt like. This is what the water felt like. Jesus was here. What is this place? And I actually got to go out with two groups of commercial fishermen out in the sea. And I actually went fishing on the Sea of Galilee with real commercial fishermen. So I wanted to get as close as I could, you know, to Jesus and the disciples and their experience, and melding that together with my experience. And one of the things that I came away with is how absolutely, okay, and I hope this is not anticlimactic, but how absolutely ordinary, ordinary that body of water is, and that ground and the mud and the muck that I was often lost, because the trail, you know, wasn't marked very well. And I would just be lost and beating my way through the through the reeds and pulling my boots out of the mud. And you know, it's a, that mud and that dirt and that water is not a lot different from the mud and dirt in Indiana and in Florida and in New York and, you know, any place. It's a place. And the other thing, I came away with the fact that it's not any holier than any other place. It's Jesus that makes place holy. It's Jesus himself. It's living the Jesus life that brings holiness to where we're living. It is not the Sea of Galilee that is holy in and of itself. And it is not the fish and the ocean that are holy in and of themselves. It's Jesus himself who makes all things beautiful and true and holy.
I love that. I love hearing that and hearing about your experience going out on the water. And I think one of the things as I'm looking, you know, I asked you this right at the beginning too about why this book, Crossing the Waters, is so relevant right now culturally, and I think it is. But I want to go back to maybe to touch on that a little bit because I've got a 24-year-old. You know, you've got still have young, not super young, but you've still got kids under your roof. You know, you're a mom to some millennials, right?
Yep.
And I think that some of them are really struggling right now, partly watching the way the church is responding to what's going on culturally. There's a lot of division, and sadly, I think some of that is driving these kids away. Sometimes it's other things, but we're seeing millennials and others walking away, leaving the church. And I think you're really working to give a fresh voice to Jesus in your book. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about his specific invitation that he gave it to the disciples, the fishermen that we know, and the disciples that he called, but he's giving it to us too. I would love for you to talk about the invitation to come follow me.
Yes. Oh, for sure, Anita. And when Jesus invited those disciples, he said, come and follow me. And that word, follow me, it in the Greek is akalutheo, and it means literally to walk the same road. Jesus is inviting us today to walk the same road with him, just as he invited those disciples then. And then we have to ask, okay, what was that road? Mm. This is why we've got to go back to the Gospels, and we've got to immerse ourselves in the Gospels. We got to remember what that road looked like. But here's what it looked like. It had a lot of loving. It was about loving people. It was about feeding people who were hungry. It was about forgiving people. It was about meeting people with mercy, pouring out the mercies of God upon them. It was about meeting them right where they were, seeing into their heart and speaking love and grace and truth to them. And this is the road that we are to be walking. But you know, the disciples didn't get that. They didn't understand that because they were looking for a different kind of road. They were looking for a different kind of Messiah and a different kind of Savior. They wanted a Messiah who would make their nation great again. They were looking for Jesus to be a political Messiah who would overthrow the government of Rome so that Israel would be on top again. And Jesus didn't do that. Jesus did the opposite. He did the opposite of what they expected. They wanted Jesus to triumph. In fact, some of them wanted Jesus to be king, right?
Yeah.
And instead, you know how Jesus won? Jesus won by dying. Yeah. Jesus won by losing. Mm. And that's the message for us today. Jesus humbled himself. He emptied himself. We can get so caught up in politics and we want to be on the winning side and we want to be, you know, we want to be made to make America great again. Jesus is not concerned about that. Jesus is concerned that we look like him, that we walk like him, that we are humble, that we are full of the fruits of the Jesus life, which is love, gentleness, kindness, mercy, compassion, forgiveness. That's what our lives are to be characterized by. And just like Jesus, We win by losing. You know, we win by dying and laying our lives down.
The countercultural message of the gospel and of Jesus. You know, I could be wrong here, but it seems to me that you really had a fresh encounter with Christ as you worked on and wrote this book. That's what it feels like.
Oh, Anita, this book absolutely was transformative for me. And I did spend 3 years immersed in the gospel stories, and I spent a lifetime trying to live it out at our fish camp in a place that's kind of hard place to live it out. So crossing the waters is kind of the fruit of all of that.
I love the stories. You know, you've shared some of them, but honestly, reading some of the stories, being in the fish camp and how they relate to the gospel stories, and it was beautiful. And I really commend this read to people. Leslie, it's always a joy to talk with you. I feel like my own faith has been strengthened and bolstered here today with this conversation. Thanks for being with me.
Oh, Anita, bless you for your good work. And just thank you, friend.
I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.